So what makes a call sound good to ducks, and how do you navigate the complexities of the waterfowl call industry? Well, this is the episode to find out. Hey, and welcome to another episode of the New Hunter's Guide, the podcast and YouTube channel helping new hunters get started and helping active hunters learn new things. Today, we are going to talk about what makes a call sound good to a duck, and a lot of other questions around similar topics and ideas. Now, in order to do this conversation justice, you really need somebody who is a duck hunter, who is also a call maker, and a musician, and is in my cell phone. And there's only one human being on planet Earth that checks all four of those boxes, and that is Riley Hendrickson. Now, for those of you that don't know, Riley has been on the show before. He helped with some of the initial duck hunting episodes, but he's done more than that. He was actually the one single-handedly responsible for pushing me into the woods on my first duck hunt after not being able to find a way to do it for years and giving up on it. He just kept talking to me and encouraged me and helping me find ways and think of things until I eventually repaid him with 1,000 endless questions as I made my way into the woods the first couple of times. But even more than that, he's also the person single-handedly responsible for the YouTube channel, The New Hunter's Guide, because he just kept telling me for months, you got to get on YouTube, and I put him off and put him off, and here we are. So Riley, the New Hunter's Guide owes you a big thank you, and I'm so glad we're able to have you on the show today. How are you doing, sir?
George, man, thank you so much for that intro. I think I'm going to have to start charging for brain trust.
We'll get a royalty coming your way from something. Don't you worry about it.
Man, I'm doing good up here in Indiana, man. I'm just sitting here and I wasn't able to get involved in crow season this past month in Indiana because it's just a short month and a week, and because I was having some health issues. But as of today, I'm on a good road getting past those issues. And yeah, I'm excited to talk to you about duck hunting.
Awesome. Well, let's go ahead and just jump off right into it here. So number one question that I've got, and a lot of people have asked, is what makes a call sound good to a duck? You got all kinds of calls. A lot of them sound good. They sound kind of like ducks, at least to me. But, you know, in terms of what actually makes it sound good, what do the ducks find appealing? What about that call makes it effective? I think a lot of people are scratching their heads over, and I think you can shine a little bit of light into that conversation.
Yeah, you know, George, the when you asked me that question, I was thinking to myself, that's such a unique question that no one is asking right now, especially in the call making industry, because people are making duck calls to sound good to what they think sounds good, and they don't even think about what it sounds like to a duck anymore. So I won't even try to go down that rabbit hole, but you know, as far back as there's been history on the Native Americans in the U.S. used to make clumps of clay to make really rough looking decoys to try to get ducks in. I mean, the duck call has been around, I think it was the late 1800s. They were starting to make these calls that were called tongue biters and lip pinchers because they had the reed hanging out. And I mean, since the market hunting days and all those years back then, men have been trying to harvest ducks and, you know, trying to figure out the next best way of trying to get them into the decoys, may they be cork, wood, or however the decoys are made. And, you know, since the late 1800s, people have been making these calls to try to get their attention. And I mean, you're talking about, and different regions of the country you have calls that are massive, 4 to 5 inches long with metal reeds, down and real foot. And you've got calls out of Arkansas and calls out of Louisiana. There are different styles. And all they were made was to try to fool a duck and to sound good to a duck. And that was the whole intention, was for hunting. And now you've got all these beautiful calls that are $150. They're all looks. And we have kind of lost that pursuit of trying to make something that sounds good to a duck. So what sounds good to a duck is what a duck sounds like. And as a call maker and a duck hunter, you're trying to reproduce that natural sound.
Now, guys, I should also let you know that Riley also has his own podcast, Rilo's Quack Chat, and his own call-making business, Rilo Game Calls. And so he's been doing this for a day or two or a year or two or longer than that, half a lifetime. And he's thoroughly invested in this subject, has talked to some of the most well-known call manufacturers in the world. And Riley, one of the things that you said that just as you were talking stuck in my mind is, you know, I remember hearing Phil Robertson tell the story about how when he was first getting started in making duck calls, he'd go to the duck calling competitions and hear all these people winning duck calling competitions. And he sat back and he said, you know what? They don't sound like ducks. They're amazing. They're making all these amazing sounds and, you know, they're impressive musicians on those little calls, but they're not sounding like ducks. And he set out then to start making his own calls that sounded like an actual duck did. And that was at that sort of junction in history, a little bit revolutionary, at least as far as I understand it. But I kind of feel like we're coming around to a similar sort of thing that's going on today, that duck calls are maybe so over-commercialized that the nuance there of, all right, is it actually sounding like a duck? Does it actually, you know, do the job it's supposed to do? That might be being lost or forgotten as people just sort of get drowned out by marketing. What do you think?
You know, it's very funny. The duck call is the same design it's been since the 1800s. And for those, I mean, the new hunters that are listening, I'll give you a little synopsis of how a duck call functions. You have your bottom and your barrel, and inside of that may it be a different style of call, Louisiana style or an Arkansas style or a real foot, whatever style it is. There's a tone board that the maker shapes to their certain specifications. So when that air is blown into the barrel, it will vibrate that reed on top of that tone board, and it will produce a quack and a hail call and a feed chuckle and all things like that. But, you know, we have focused. You can't reinvent the wheel. I mean, a duck call is a duck call. So, I mean, you'll see a lot of these guys that say, my call doesn't stick, or my call doesn't do this, or my call can do this air presentation. And when you get right down to it, it's roughly the same design as it's been since 1905 when the first official patent came through.
And you know, what's kind of funny about that is I've been in the woods that time and sat back and gone, man, that is just an absolute terrible hunter over there calling. Like, would they just stop? It is the worst duck call I have ever heard. Almost, I'm getting ready to get up and walk over there and be like, dude, you would have better odds if you would just be quiet. And then a bunch of ducks swim out and they're the ones making the noise. And I'm like, are you serious? These are real ducks. Yeah. That's coming out of real ducks. And here we are trying to, you know, engineer stuff with all these different materials. And it's just like, maybe we're overthinking this a little bit.
Yeah, we definitely are, because what's very strange is some ducks are regional. And for instance, in Washington State, I had a bunch of people from Washington State order my calls that are Louisiana tone boards. And I have noticed that since I went to making a Louisiana tone board that is different, it's a different style. It's one of the different styles of duck calls. I personally make it because it would be easier for a new hunter or a novice hunter to use, duck hunter use. And I've noticed that these calls are going to different states that I would never imagine, like Washington State Why would they want a Louisiana duck call that is made out of Indiana, funny enough? But they wanted it because it produces a sound that is not that a lot of the guys over there aren't using. So, I mean, you'll get duck hunters that want to use something that's going to sound a little different. And that plays into that a little bit.
Gotcha. So you talked there about the Louisiana tone board. You know, how many different kinds of tone boards, generally speaking, are there? And, you know, if somebody's looking for a duck call and they don't know what they're doing, they don't know what they're looking for, you know, what should they keep in mind in terms of the tone board?
When it comes to a duck call, and I was like this for a long time, I thought a duck call was a duck call. Okay, so a duck commander duck call is a duck commander, or other brands are their own, you know. But I didn't realize that these different brands use different styles of tone board. And I mean, you have the Louisiana tone board that is really good for beginners and novice. You've got the Catahoula, which is a duck commander style where the Louisiana has a wedge and a tone board in your call, and then your Catahoula is the wedge is turned around and it's wedged in that style. And that's what Phil Robertson kind of got popular with the duck commander calls, was the Catahoulas. And then you have Arkansas's beloved J-frame that has a little cork wedge in there. They all do different things, but the J-frame is kind of like the Corvette. It can handle all the notes, and that's what they use for competitions. And then you have the last one is the Real Foot call, which is the old big calls with metal reeds that sound just absolutely awesome and traditional, but they're hard to blow. And they all have their specifications. And, you know, if you're wanting to get a call, I would listen to sound files and decide, do I just want to quack? Do I want to sound like a duck, or do I eventually want to do some meat calling competitions or stuff like that? Because a J-frame would be better for that. So they're all different tools, and some duck hunters use all of those tools. They'll have every one of those tone boards on their lanyard.
So then for someone trying to get their first call and get into the sport, you think the Louisiana tone board is probably the simplest place to start?
Or Catahoula.
Okay. Yeah. And then, great. So what about reeds? There's all this talk about single reed, double reed, triple reed. You know, I'm sure there's some nuances of sound, and like everything else, probably some nuances of difficulty. How do we read that? No pun intended.
That was so awesome. No, when it comes to reeds, you have your single reed, your double reed, and your triple reed. The two companies really well known right now, the big box store companies that have triple reeds, are Sure Shot and Duck Commander. And really the single reed was the first one. That's what everyone used. I mean, it's tried and true. It's you have to put a lot of air into it. I mean, there's a learning curve with it. Now, a duck call with training wheels on it, I would say would be your double reed, because I mean, you blow into it and it's a natural quack. And, you know, a lot of guys starting out, they start with double reeds, and I started with a double reed. I still love the sound of a double reed. And I also use a single reed, and the triple reed. I actually had the triple reed from Duck Commander. That's a poly call, the little green, dark green poly call. And, what is so unique about that call is it actually, the tone changes and gets richer every season you use it. It's the most bizarre thing.
Oh, that's interesting. I have that exact same call also. Somebody got me one, and I'll have to keep an ear on that. I've never thought about such a thing. I would imagine maybe the wood calls would change a little over time, but I wouldn't think that something like that does. And speaking of that, so then you got wood calls, you got polymer calls, you got acrylic calls, you probably have calls made out of bone and dozen other different
micarta
things.
Micarta.
You know, that too, whatever that is. And so what do these different materials give you? What are the benefits of them, and what should people look for?
So when you go, so a poly call is just a molded call out of a mold. that they get the molds from China or they make them here, and they just all day long, it's just cookie cutter. They pour the plastic in, the plastic resin, it hardens. They put one piece into the other, it's ready to go. Honestly, I mean, like I'm going to name drop a little bit here because the new hunters may be going to a big box store and looking for some of these calls. So if you go into a store, you're going to see a lot of poly calls because that's kind of like the starter call. And so you're going to see some Haydels, you're going to see Duck Commanders, and all of those mostly are poly. Unless there's a couple of wooden ones in there that are on that they just do the same thing with, but with a CNC machine that just routers it out. But those are a great point to start with on duck calls. And then you get your woods and your acrylics and your micartas. And the acrylic is loud. I mean, acrylic calls are loud. I've got a couple of them from other duck call makers. And I mean, they're loud and they're crisp. And then if you want kind of a traditional feel, a wood call is very traditional. It has a mellow tone. If you use a harder wood, like I make some calls out of hickory or hedge, they have a really sharp sound. So, I mean, it's kind of like shopping for a car. You may get into a Ford Taurus or a Ford Escape or a Chevy, whatever, but you'll have a couple calls on your lanyard that you say these are good calls until you finally find the one that you're like, I like acrylic and I like double reed.
Gotcha. So then, you know, you've got some of these calls come in at really high price points. You know, what do you get for a $150 call versus a $30 call?
For $150, that is the price that person has put their time at. How long it takes them to make it, it'll probably have inlays, probably is made out of exotics for $150. I mean, just recently I saw a call that was for sale for $185, almost $200. And I have seen $200, $250 calls. And then depends on the name of the person. If you have a certain name, I won't name drop everyone, but if you have a certain name in the industry, the call making industry crosses over to the hunting industry because there are certain names people know. People buy their calls for $250 and then turn around and sell them the next day for $500 just because of the name that's attached to that call and the reputation. So a $150 call, that is just a custom call maker is attaching how much their time is worth. And so as far as a $30 call, I've seen custom calls go from $30 to $150. So, I mean, the $30 call may be just a basic wood, a cherry, a poplar, a walnut, whatever. And then the $150 may be your inlaid Paduke with zebra wood and purple heart that costs way much more money because of the price of the lumber. So
does the more expensive call sound more like a
no? they all sound like it's when you get to that price, you know, you and some call makers will make a call that is designed for competitions or they'll sound like a duck, right? So, it's that fine line. And you know, it's just the person's preference. You know, one guy may like it high and tinny. One guy may like making a call that's low and gravelly. So when you're watching call, if you get on, look up YouTube, you'll find call makers on there or people or big box stores. Listen to what you like and then go from there for sure.
Gotcha. So then you've got those different calls, you got the different price points, you got all the different factors and facets and variables and decorations and stuff that goes into it. What about call maintenance? What kind of maintenance should you have to do to a call on a daily basis or an annual basis?
So it's pretty easy. For an acrylic, there's no maintenance, right? On a poly, no maintenance. Now it depends on how the reeds are wedged in there. Maybe once every 2 years. Now, duck commander calls are sealed off, like the duck picker and the triple thread are sealed off to where you cannot take the reeds out. So when it breaks, it's done. But there are some calls that you can pull the reeds out. And about every 2 years, you should kind of replace your reeds. And there's different YouTube videos that you can watch on replacing your reeds in your duck call and how you can just buy reed material and just save your old reeds and just use those as a pattern to cut your new reeds out and dog ear them where they should be. As far as wooden calls, as soon as you're done for the year, because they're either they have oil on them somewhere. So whenever that moisture from the hunting season is sitting there, if you leave your insert of your barrel in your duck call, it could swell shut and you'll never get that out. So after the hunting season, when you store them, take your barrel and your insert of your duck call apart and just let them sit in a cabinet somewhere. And then before season, maybe apply just a little bit of oil to your tone board.
Gotcha. And then, you know, during the day while you're hunting, should you have to do anything to a call? Because I'll tell you, one of my favorite things about your calls is that they just work. Every time I pick one up, it just works. I've got several other brands that I've used, and even some I still take out with me because they sound good. But after, you know, an hour or two or too many blows, or I don't know, they get gunked up, they get wet, they stop working. I got to take them apart, dry them, clean them. And I'm like, this probably is not the way this is supposed to be going. But I don't know enough about it to know if that's normal or not.
So whenever is your call locking up? Are the reeds locking up whenever you're calling on them?
Probably. I blow and then little to nothing comes out.
Okay, so whenever what's happening is moisture is accumulating in your call in between your reeds or under your reed if you have a single reed. So all you have to do in that situation is turn the call around and blow through the back of the call, just blow gently, and it should push that moisture out of the reeds, and you should be good to go.
Gotcha. And so what do you do with your call so that never happens?
I have been known to take a little WD-40 and put it under the tone board, on the front of the tone board, because water is a displacer, or WD-40 displaces water.
Oh, fascinating. Well, I was just wondering, you know, does that do anything to the material, or you got to clean that up after or anything like that?
You would maybe want to hit it with just a little, if it's wooden, you may want to hit it with some oil. If I remember correctly, you have the field, Rilo field call, which is, I may be wrong, I think you have that. And then you have a Rilo working man. So, I mean, the Rilo Working Man has an acrylic tone board, so there's not a lot of maintenance there. But with the field call, you would have to just, it's made out of cedar. The tone board is made out of cedar on that. So cedar is naturally just they found cedar tone board duck calls that are over 100 years old and they haven't cracked. I mean, you can douse those in water and they'll be fine.
Wow. Yeah. Cedar is some amazing stuff. That's for sure. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the calls that you make and how you go about it, how you do it, you know, what you do differently and what you do to make them sound like a duck and, you know, the different lines and approaches and what you got going on there.
Yeah. So, what I do is because I have been around so many sawmills. I started as a sawmill worker when I was 18, and I've been in the timber industry since I was 18 years old. And I mean, I'm going on 34. So, I mean, I've made a lot of contacts, And one thing that I noticed is, you know, they would cut off a board and it's useless because it's only 8 inches long instead of a foot or 2 foot. Well, I realized once I started making duck calls that I could take that waste and turn it into a product. I've been making duck calls for, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years now. And when I started that process, I mean, I've been in the timber industry since I was 18. And I noticed that whenever they would cut off a board, there would be some scrap and it's not really long enough to use it for anything. But once I started making duck calls, I realized that that scrap was thick enough and long enough to make duck calls out of. So that's when that journey started to happen. And whenever people are like, why are your prices so low? When why is your price 30 when so-and-so is 70s? It's because I have all these connections and I'm able to repurpose that wood into duck calls now. So
you were just out there doing your job, minding your own business. And then you see this random wood that they're just throwing away and you're like, hey, what are the two things that go into making a duck call? The cost of wood and the cost of time. And then boom, you've got this resource right in front of you and instant business model.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's crazy is now last year there was such a boom of portable sawmills show up. I mean, within five miles, I bet there's 30 different people with portable mills just everywhere, just cutting up logs everywhere. So I was able to tap into that as well. And so, I mean, whenever you buy a duck call from me, that is local, my local timber from my area. And I've even split wood before just to get blanks to make duck calls. So, I mean, you're taking the, you know, there's history to that call. There's the grain of the call. That's why the grain of the wood, that's, you know, that's why I love making wooden duck calls. And I'm not really a big fan of acrylic because the history there, I mean, it's gone through so many people's hands before it's shaped into a duck call and put into your hands as an order or someone buys it for you as a gift. I mean, there's history there.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I think your big call right now that you've been pouring a lot of time into and cranking out is the field call, right?
Yeah, I've been working on the field calls. The field call, the field elite. And then this year I actually came out with a teal call for early season blue wing and green wing teal hunting. And then on top of that, it's like, how much more busy can I be? I've been working on a goose flute and then coming up very soon, I've been announcing it, but when I got sick, I had to postpone it. But I developed a new tone board called the Louisiana Hammerhead, and we're going to be releasing that very, very soon. So that'll be just a different product, have a different option on there.
Awesome. So, I mean, I've got one of the Worky Man calls, called in my first duck ever with it. Got one of your field calls, which I can honestly say is my favorite call. I love the sound. I love it's just so easy to make duck noises. You almost can't mess up, especially after I've heard real ducks. And I'm like, oh, wow, they're terrible at making duck sounds. You know, it's just like, oh, wow, this is unbelievable. So what do you do with the field call? Tell me a little bit. Tell everybody a little bit about it. And, you know, how do you make those? And, you know, what's the special, the Rylo sauce that's going into those?
So the Rylo field call is just a basic throw around call. I mean, that call is made out of anywhere from poplar to hickory. The bottoms are usually cherry. Cherry has a really nice, it's kind of a tone wood. I've seen cherry guitars before. So, I mean, it gives you a little tone out of there. And of course, I use cedar for the tone boards for those. And then if you buy a Field Elite, that's more of a walnut with a brass band. It looks pretty and like a traditional call. But yeah, these calls are made to use and throw around in the field. And we've had last year when I came out with the double reef field, man, we had so many people from just everywhere getting those and sending me pictures of ducks. And I mean, it was just really something, because the field call is actually easier to make. I call it a cookie cutter call, because I can make them the exact same every single time, and I can kick out about 10 at a time. They're a really good call. And I mean, like I said, it's made out of wood, and that's, that's pretty important to me because of my just background as a sawmill worker.
And, you know, like, my favorite thing is it just works every single time. You blow the call works. I never have to worry when I pick up that call, is a duck sound going to come out the other end, or am I going to have to scramble to find another call? And, durable means a lot. I think a lot of people don't realize until they've been in the field a season or two just how much of a beating your gear can take. Like, I've always been someone that, you know, likes to take real good care of their stuff. And, you know, I used to clean my gun every time I used it, and, you know, just real perfectionist about everything. And I don't know what it is about continually getting out in the woods at 3 and 4 in the morning, time after time. And, you know, by the time you're settling into your second or third build here by 10 o'clock, you just walk into sticks and puncture your waders, your gun falls over, you're like, oh, whatever, you just pick it up, you don't take it apart or clean it, you just dump the water out, keep hunting, you know, your calls fall into the mud, you just wipe them off on your shirt and keep going like nothing happened, your shells fall in the water, you just put them in your pocket to dry out, you reach this point where, you know, you have a new normal in terms of what you're willing to accept from wear and tear, and, you know, your stuff gets scratched up. It's just, you know, I don't know what it is, duck brain. You just lose some of your higher order functions there because you've been out in the elements for so long. But it really makes a difference when you grab your stuff and it just works. And you got all this expensive stuff that's super duper, but it doesn't work every time. And you're like, you know, what's going on here? And so, big fan of your calls, because they sound great, they're easy to blow, and they just work every time.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think Phil Robertson coined the phrase when someone asked him why he shot Benelli shotguns. He said, because they go boom, boom, boom. So, I mean, when there's that reliability in your equipment, you know, that's, and I'm not going to say that my calls are just the perfect call that isn't going to stick or whatever. I mean, when you're hunting and 5 below, I guarantee it's going to stick with that moisture in the call. But, you know, just trying the thing I was wanting to do was get a functional, good functioning quality call into hunters, new hunters, experienced hunters' hands, that will function and sound like a duck. And I switched to the Louisiana tone board because it sounded more ducky, and also I can kick out way more of them, so I'm able to have them readily available. So it's been a fun ride. The one thing I'll say this, George, is the one thing I love about call making and selling calls and shipping calls out, and I may annoy people when I do this, is whenever someone puts an order in to Rilo Game Calls, I will contact them almost immediately. And I will ask them, like, hey, where are you from? How long have you been duck hunting? And I'll start up a conversation. And if their call is on back order and it's not finished, I'll send them pictures of the call being made. Or I also go live on Facebook. Sometimes I'll make the duck call live so you can watch me make it. Those kind of have to be scheduled usually. But man, my favorite thing about duck call making is really interacting with the customers and becoming good friends with them. And I'll tell you what, the best people that have ordered calls from me are the new Hunter's Guide listeners, let me tell you, when I see that the code for the discount come through, like, I know instantly that these people are going to be great to work with. And if I contact them, they'll contact me back and we'll talk about duck hunting. And I mean, the new Hunter's Guide customers, man, your listeners are really good people.
Love to hear that. And I can tell you this from experience. I've taken your calls out, and I went out one morning. It was 8 degrees. I mean, it was so cold, like your waders just freeze into the shape that they're in while you're wearing them. And I mean, we're out there, daylight's coming. I took a guy with me. It was his first duck hunt ever. He had never gone duck hunting. We'd been talking about it for a while. That was the morning. And I'm like, so you got all your stuff. You got all your licenses. We're sitting in the blind, right? We've built the blind. We're sitting there in the dark. And he's like, oh no, the website was down. I couldn't order it yesterday. So he's on his phone 5 minutes before legal shooting light. It's 8 degrees. Your fingers are freezing off of your hand. And he's online putting in and buying his license, his duck stamp, and his migratory game bird permit right there. Gets the email, here's your temporary license that'll, you know, is good for so many days. He puts his phone away. He says, okay, I got it. 2 minutes left, legal shooting light. At legal shooting light, I lift up my field call, blew just a couple of quacks. I mean, 30 seconds later, two ducks just come out of the dark mist, out of nowhere, fly right in. Boom, we've got two ducks. He leaves with a duck, I leave with a duck. He's had his license for, you know, 2.5 minutes. And that call never froze up all that day. Some of the acrylic ones froze up. In fact, I've got a theory that the wood is maybe a little better insulator and is maybe less prone to freezing.
Yeah, that very well could be, because I mean, poly and acrylic, they get cold, man. And yeah, you may be right on with the wood being more insulated. One thing I'm going to bring up, is George, is that last year you did, I've been hunting, I think this is going to be my 10th season. And last year, I'm pretty sure was your second season. And you shot one of my bucket list birds and was talking about it so nonchalantly, like it was an everyday thing. And I just want to say I'm happy for you. But you shooting a black duck, like, that is crazy, man. It put a smile on my face when I heard that.
Well, you know, I think we just may have more of them up here. You've got ducks down there that don't even exist in our part of the country. Like, I have never seen or heard of a teal until I got on YouTube and watched other people hunting them. And I'm like, we just don't have those. I mean, every now and then one may fly over and land somewhere, but I've never seen one in my life before I started watching YouTube. So you just got different ducks in different parts of the country, I think, with a little more prevalence.
Oh yeah, man. And just wait, the day you see a teal come into your spread in Pennsylvania, if that day ever happens where you see a teal, it will just be a flash. Like, they are that fast. They just flash by like jets. They're called the little jets because, I mean, they're in and out before you can even think about aiming.
Yeah, and I hope that doesn't happen because I'm liable to try to shoot it, and that's not on the menu. You'd be in big trouble if you shot the only teal in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, listening, what episode was it? I've listened to all the episodes, even though I'll never go elk hunting. Well, for, you know, but, you know, it's, what episode was it? Were you using an inflatable kayak?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Inflatable rowboat. Got an inflatable rowboat. Then I had to go to the Army surplus store to find something big enough that I could pack it in on my back. So when we were in water that was too deep to wade and didn't have a duck, there was some sort of plan B in order to get out there and retrieve birds.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you able to have a dog yet?
I personally, where I'm at, am not able to have one. There is a couple guys that I hunt with. They've got dogs, so that always makes it easier. when you're out with them. But we gotta be ingenuitive. We gotta use what we can in order to figure out what to do. So I got my inflatable rowboat, and of course I had to get that registered and get a boat stamp on it and the launch permit and pay my $10 every 2 years to be able to use it. But as ridiculous as that is, we got one and I'm able to blow it up in about 2 minutes flat. So as long as the water is not moving too quick, but you can row it pretty fast. So it works okay. It's not ideal, but it's way better than not being able to recover ducks, or just what it would be is not being able to hunt certain spots.
Oh man, this thing that we do is an addiction like no other, George. when you shoot your first duck, and then 10 years later you're sitting here talking to your friend that has a podcast about ducks, and then you have a podcast about duck calls, and you've got three Labradors sitting outside looking at you like, hey, come train us again, or you're making duck calls. I mean, it's a slippery slope, and it's a fun time. Anyone that's listening to this, I highly suggest, if you keep saying, oh, maybe next year, you need to look at your seasons and at least get out one time and try it. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And of course, we got, I don't know, 20 or 30 episodes that can help you get into that if this is the first one that you found. And, you know, if you've listened this far, chances are you have an interest in duck calls. So you definitely want to check out Riley's podcast. I believe it's called Rilo's Quack Check. Tell us a little bit about it.
So on Rilo's Quack Chat, I try to do it every week, sometimes every other week, but I will have a guest call into my studio, and they could be a small shop duck call maker. And what that is there is a story about the person behind the duck calls. I mean, they're, you know, what's sad is you don't hear these stories until the old duck call maker has passed away, and then people tell those stories. And a lot of famous, well-known duck hunters and duck call makers have passed away in the last 10 years, and we'll never be able to hear their stories about who taught them, how they started, what got them into duck hunting, what got them into call making, like what are their experiences. And so some of these legends that passed away in the last 10 years, we'll never be able to hear those stories. So Rilo's Quack Chat, I'll get a small shop guy, or I mean, even recently, Rod Haydell of Haydell Game Calls, a big company, came on and talked about the history and how his dad developed the DR85, which is, I would say, a legendary duck call in the community. A lot of people use it. So it's just getting the story behind the duck calls, because, I mean, there's, like I said, there's just so much history with duck hunting. I mean, when you get into duck hunting, you have decoy makers, dog trainers, duck call makers, duck call competitions, decoy making competitions. I mean, you can do something 365 days a year to keep involved. I mean, you could work with your dog or make a decoy or a duck call. So, I mean, the season ends, but the community doesn't.
That is a beautiful thing right there. I love the year-round pursuit, that all year round you can be engaged, planning, practicing, thinking, you know, testing your stuff, getting ready for the next season. Of course, you don't need to spend 40 hours a week doing it, but you can always be engaged. You can always be talking to people about something. That's one of the great things about waterfowl hunting is, one, you've got that community, and it spans such a long part of the year that you can really enjoy it and take your time and get out there. And, you know, you can hunt in some states from September to February, some even probably more than that. And if you travel, you can probably extend that season more still. So there's a lot to it. And I just want to, Riley, I totally forgot about it till you brought it up, but we do have a code, NHGCAST, for Rilo Game Calls that can get you guys a 10% off discount on any of the calls that are there. You can head to the website, newhuntersguide.com, check out the show notes. I'll put the code there, put a link there, and I literally had to look it up while we were talking, like, oh yeah, I remember that episode, and so found that, so you guys can save a little bit there, and Riley will give you the royal treatment right off the bat. But before we go, Riley, any final thoughts, ideas, things you wanted to share, or just speaking to people today?
Yeah, you know, when you get into hunting, and I won't even say this about duck hunting, this is duck hunting and all other types of hunting included. You know, you can, they've done studies on this, and there are, I think it's 4 or 5 stages of a hunter. And it's the, I get them out of order all the time, but there's a point where it's all about getting your limit, or it's the point about, you know, the technique, you know, it's all about how you set up your decoys or how you get up into the stand and how you prep for a deer hunt or a duck hunt. But you know, you grow out of that eventually. And I'm at the point now where duck hunting, what's really cool about it is we're hunting the experience. Cause I mean, there are many hunts that I've just loved and just fallen, just really enjoyed that hunt, and no birds were shot, but man, you had great conversations in the blind. And you know, the pursuing the experience, my wife asked me, I think it was a couple months ago, like, what were my 3 dream hunts to go on? And I named, and none of them are good for duck hunting. Honestly, they aren't good places, but it was the people I told her. I was like, I would like to go down with Danny and Richard in Louisiana. I'd like to go hunt with George Kanitas one time in Pennsylvania. So, I mean, if you're getting into hunting, just, I know it's fun to get the limits. It's fun to, you know, the technique. It's fun to do all those things, but take time to enjoy the experience. And get out in the woods. I mean, that's the best thing I can tell you. And when you buy a wooden duck call, I mean, there's history there. There's any duck call. And I'm going to say this before we close. I use calls from other call makers. I use plastic calls. George, you know what the best duck call in the world is? You know what the best call is?
What is it?
The call that you get from a relative or you pass down to a relative. Or to a new duck hunter. That is the best call. Plastic, acrylic, wood. The call that you spend your time in the duck blind with, that has all those stories, that either you, that call passed from one hand to yours, or you're passing that call to someone else. That's the best call in the world. And it doesn't have to be any brand. It's the call that you spend all those hours. And that call that has seen 1,000 pieces of honey bun get lodged underneath the reeds. I mean, that's the best call. And all I can say and finish up here is chase the experience. May it be duck hunting, deer hunting, whatever. And get out in the woods.
Amen to that. Absolutely. I often say one of my favorite things about waterfowl hunting especially is that it's a team sport. It's something that is almost always better to do with someone else, with a couple other people. You know, you can do it by yourself. You can get out and hunt shallow streams and jump hunt and things like that. And maybe that's a fair way to get out and get started without having to buy much gear. But I feel like one of the best parts about it is it's a team sport. You're going out with other people. You're building relationships, building memories, having fun. You know, even if nothing's happening, you're never bored. It's just a great pursuit. And there's so many ways and places and tactics and strategies. And, you know, the call is just one of those beautiful pieces of it. And, you know, I'm a gear guy. I like gear. Gear's fun for me. I enjoy it. And, you know, anytime I have a piece of gear that just works good and does the job and you use it and it works, it just... You know, you pull it out, you just, even though it's 3 months before the season, you pull that call out, you pull out that piece of gear, and it has an effect on you. You just feel good about it. You're like, yeah, can't wait for what's going to happen. Can't wait for the next season, and everything that happened last season comes pouring back, all the memories, all the thoughts, all the good times, everything that you learned and the people that you hunted with. So it's a beautiful thing, guys. Make sure that you get out there, that you spend time out there. It's huge. But we better get going here. We're running out of time again. Guys, I really appreciate you. Thank you so much for watching. Make sure you head to the website, get that code, get the show notes, and lots of other episodes. Until next time, God bless you, and go get them in the woods.